You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus streaming. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 6, titled Chapter 14, The Tragedy. Aaron, what did you think of this episode?
The tragedy, the death of the poor Razor Crest. I mean, it's kind of been the ongoing joke of this season, but I don't think there's any rebuilding it now.
No, Humpty is dumptied for sure. Like that. I mean, it's shrapnel. It is shrapnel at this point.
And there's the stick shift left. Baby Yoda's teething ring, and there's the Beskar spear, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, the true tragedy is Baby Yoda himself, Grogu, getting stolen by the evil Moff Gideon.
I thought it was the retconning of Boba Fett again. It's not that.
There's 500,000 fanboys screaming out, but Boba's not a Mandalorian, and they were all silenced by the Favreau. And the Fellini. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I've been having, you know, I've been watching the spirited discourse about the Mandalorian and the WPMs, the Wikipedias per minute is writing. And I just, like, I guess that's where it just is hard to get too bent out of shape about Star Wars canon, is because I've lived through, like, three purges. I've lived through three or four different origin stories for Boba Fett, and ever more creative ways to, like, you know, retcon it and, like, keep the retconning consistent, and, you know, but this feels really cool. And, you know, Jango or Boba Fett showing up and just absolutely wrecking shop with and without his armor, in loving action pornography by Robert Rodriguez. It was a really cool moment. Seeing Slave One ripping out of the atmosphere is a really cool moment. Seeing the Mandalorian teaming up with Boba Fett is, like, an amazing, like, this, they're setting up an all-star ass wrecking shop team, for these final two episodes. And it's really fun. What did you think of the episode?
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have a lot of, like, the jetpack and Boba Fett problems that a lot of people do. Like, yeah, I think it kind of sucks if you're an older fan of Star Wars like I am, that they would just sort of dismiss you and say, well, you know, either get with the new shit or get out. It's a weird, like, sort of retcon gatekeeping sort of thing, but, like,
right.
I don't really care. Like, okay, so Boba Fett didn't think about his jetpack. Well, he had Grogu to think about. You know, he's not thinking. That's the point.
Excuse me, Mandalorian forgot about his jetpack. Boba Fett never forgets about his jetpack.
Yeah, I forgot who is the real Mandalorian here. Yeah,
I think the real Mandalorian is the friends we make along the way, Jim.
It's true. It's true. The real Mandalorian is in my heart.
Yes.
But I think it's fun. You know, it's this show has turned into, go to planet, have action scene, get one piece of the clue, continue forward, repeat, yeah. You know, rinse, repeat. And that's fine. That's fine. That's what it is. And just sit back, I guess, and enjoy the show for that. And I'm having fun with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it's, my 14-year-old has not seen it yet. Cause I was gone all weekend. He's been at his mom's, but when he comes back, I'm sure he's going to think this is the coolest fucking thing he's ever seen. And he's not wrong.
Oh yeah. And I mean, people have been waiting decades for Boba Fett action, right? We've never really seen the badass that Boba Fett is. And I think they did it pretty well. I didn't have any problems with the fight scenes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Boba Fett's always cast this extraordinarily long shadow in the canon. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he's the most feared bounty hunter in the galaxy. But all we've seen him from in the canon is he's gotten scolded by Vader. He almost shot someone until Vader made him stop. He almost captured Han Solo again until the blind fucking Han Solo launched him into the Sarlacc pit. And then he got belched. Yeah. But he's always been like this. Like, I remember in the Star Wars miniatures game I used to play. Like, if you had, like, you know, if Boba Fett was worth, like, 47 points of a 150 point army, and he would just destroy your half of the board if you fucking let him. He had twin attacks and double attacks. He had crazy, like, you just couldn't touch him. Video games, he's always this fucking legend. In a lot of expanded universe, he was always this, like, supreme thing. And we've never seen it in any kind of canon source until, you know, like live action. I'll specify that live action until just now. And it was extraordinarily satisfying. And as an older man with a expanding gut myself, also seeing Fett the Muss land, you know, with the heavy footsteps and just start ripping these stormtroopers limb from limb was really fun. It was a lot of fun. I like seeing him as kind of like this weird dark Jedi monk, wielding the gaffy sticks and like a sledgehammer. I liked seeing him even the crazy shit like knee rockets, which I think were only a thing on like the visual dictionaries or the incredible cross sections. Like,
I didn't even know about those. I was like, oh, okay, knee rockets. Sure, why not? Why not?
Yeah,
you can have wrist rockets. You can have knee rockets.
Absolutely. It's a wasted piece of armor. You're just going to protect your knee. How often is that? Let's put some rockets in there. That's what we need to do. It's just really cool. But on the other hand, it showcases all of the weaknesses of the Mandalorians. Like, they just established 3 episodes ago that the Mandalorian can remote control his jetpack. Yet this episode features Mando running up and down a hill when time is of an essence, when the child is being ripped from him by dudes with jetpacks, or I guess robots with jetpacks, and he's got to send Boba up there with Slave One. That's kind of thing where, like, obviously the plot requires him to put down his jetpack and forget about it the rest of the episode, but...
But what if he didn't?
My 14-year-old's never going to notice that.
What if he didn't? And what if Mando actually showed any kind of weakness whatsoever, and he flew up to fight those dark troopers and lost?
I thought that's like, where they were going to go with it. That he was.
That's an amazing action scene, right? Like, you go flying through the air fighting dark troopers while they're escaping with Grogu, like.
And you're not good enough. You're not good enough yet. You don't have all the tools and skills and maybe personnel.
It's growth.
Yeah. Seeing the Mandalorian get spanked and like go, but you know, tail between his legs, and have to regroup with Boba Fett and Finnick and Bill Burr, get the squad together, like it'll make it that much more tasty when he finally gets his vengeance and they finally get Grogu back, and you know, Moff Gideon gets served out finally. I don't know. I don't know why they didn't consider that, or if maybe they did, they just ran out of, you know. It's a 30-minute episode. I wonder how often the runtime comes down to, like, well, our action shot sucked up this much money, and we don't have time to do the thing. So you know what? He's just going to forget his backpack.
I guess the one thing you couldn't do is cut any of, like, the Boba Fett action scene. Like, that would be the most disappointing if we see Boba Fett on screen and there's an attack and we don't get to see Boba Fett fighting.
And knowing the double Fs, if there's 40 minutes of material on the table and they're making cuts, they're not going to cut any of Robbie's action scenes with Boba Fett, because that's what they want to see as bad as any of us do.
And you're not going to cut any Baby Yoda stuff, right? Because Baby Yoda's too cute. Got to leave him on screen. Sounds like we should get into the recap.
Probably.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
All right, we start off with Mando and Grogu approaching Tython. They're doing the Jedi catch thing again. I guess Mando's just trying to like sort of try and help teach him, except, you know, he's not very good at it because he's not a Jedi. And
yeah, I didn't understand this scene. Like, it's fun for, like, you know, his obvious pleasure at using the child's name and the child responding to it, and him like chuckling under his helmet. And then I guess the thing I don't understand is when he had Baby Yoda grab the stick shift and then he says Dank Ferrick, which I've always taken as like an exclamation of displeasure, like bloody hell or son of a bitch or fucking hell. You know what? But like he used it and it scared Baby Yoda. Then he's like, oh, no. But I wasn't sure if he actually meant like, yeah, what was he doing? Is he's like hoping that he wouldn't be able to do it this time, that the skills would fade, or is he hoping that things would work better? Like, what was the day? Or is this kind of like a more of a hot damn kind of thing where you can use it, or fuck, you know, like fuck is like a lot more like dank. Maybe Dank Ferrick is more like a fuck that you can use it in multifaceted ways. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. I wasn't sure about the Dank Ferrick stuff. I mean, the whole thrust of this is to emotionally connect us between, you know, Mando and Grogu. So,
and it does feel like they are setting up that nicely, that like he is kind of in denial. Like he's acting like, hey, if I just find a Jedi to give you up to, it's going to be easy peasy, kid. But like he's denying how much the child is attached to him. He's denying how much he's attached to the child.
Yeah.
You know, he's making up all these excuses. I can't train you, too power. Like, it's weird because I would say they're setting up for a situation where the Mandalorian does train Grogu.
He can't.
As like a foundling bounty hunter. I saw a suggestion. Oh, someone suggested that you're going to find out that the Mandalorian actually refers to the child when all things are dead, done and said. But I'm like, I mean, that's almost too cool of an idea for Star Wars to countenance. A Master Yoda level Jedi that's going to be trained to be a bounty hunter.
Yeah, I'm picturing the suit that the Mandalorians no doubt already have made, the Baby Yoda, the Grogu miniature Mandalorian suit. Because, you know, if the Empire has Baby Yoda handcuffs, why the fuck not? Why not?
Of course, those wee little handcuffs. But I don't know, because like usually when Star Wars has countenanced like a gray Jedi, you know, like a mercenary like Kyle Katarn, he's never been like chosen one levels of power, right? Yeah. He's always been kind of like a fringe Jedi that can do, you know, he has his skills here, and I guess in a video game you can power him up to be Palpatine or Luke Skywalker or whatever, but like it would be a whole thing to like, okay, well, you're going to have the highest midichlorian count and you're also going to run around in Beskar armor. I mean, holy shit, it's super cool, but it's almost like universe breaking. Like, why doesn't he just become king of the galaxy, you know?
Well, that might be a temptation. You know,
it's true. King of the Mandalores, at least, right? Is going to have Baby Yoda wielding the Darksaber by the end of this thing?
Why not?
The Mandalorian is what he'll be.
This whole scene feels like a prelude to a breakup. Like he's trying to soften the blow that he knows is coming from when he's got a breakup with Baby Yoda.
Yeah, it's like when you're trying to talk someone in an idea that's as a bad idea and it's your idea. Like, don't you want to do this? I thought you wanted to do this. And yeah.
Yeah, like, you're going to have to go with the Jedi when they show up. You know, we'll find them. You're special, you know? You gotta do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, trying to let Grogu down easy was the whole vibe I got.
Mm-hmm.
The next scene is they're landing near the Seeing Stones, and the whole kind of landscape there is rocky and mountainous, so they kind of have to land a little far away, and then they jet up to the top of the mountain. Mando places Grogu on the rock and looks around, and then there's this moment where, like, butterflies are sort of congregating around Grogu, and then we see Slave One fly in overhead, and Mando turns around. You know, he's been kind of looking around to see if there's any way to activate the thing. He turns around and Grogu's communing with some kind of spirit energy force field thing that Mando can't pass through. And so he decides to buy Grogu some time by taking on Boba Fett.
Yeah, I love it that he's like, you know, it seems like he's more interested in the butterflies and the insect life. And then Mando turns around, sees a threat, and suddenly he's become one of the force in a lotus pose.
Yeah.
You know, this like impenetrable field of energy around them, all these glowing Jedi runes. It's pretty, it's a typical Mandalorian, you know?
Yeah. Until I saw baby Grogu, in this, like you said, lotus pose thing, I couldn't really picture him doing that, but it worked pretty well. Like, you get the sense of like, oh, okay, he's trained. He's been trained before. He's like actually really good at this. It was cool, and I'm glad they
count through the roof.
It's spiked off the chart. I'm glad they had a reason why just using his ship wouldn't work this time, because it didn't look like he could land anywhere over there, so that was cool,
right?
As opposed to season one where they were just like, you need to ride this animal out there to this place. Why is that? Because it's the only way to pass. This is the way, do it. Motherfucker.
It's a good location spot, because I was even looking like, how the hell are you going to land on? And then like, oh, sure enough, you can. And you got the jetpack now, so you don't have to like ride a band up there or whatnot. But
right.
Yeah. Go down with the windows down.
Mm-hmm.
Which I would. That's the other thing. It's like, what the fuck is he talking about? And then they smash cut to him flying with the armor. And I'm like, oh. I also like how the Mandalorian, they depict the Mandalorian, at least that's how I see it, as he's not completely in control of the jetpack. Like, he's doing a lot of kind of like the way I would look like if I'm trying to balance on a ball or something. You know, a lot of like kind of semi-frantic hand moments or hand movements and balancing. I mean, he's clearly proficient, but he's maybe not Boba Fett level proficient yet.
Oh, yeah. It'll take some time. So then we get to see Boba Fett in his Jedi robes. obviously not Jedi, but robes. He tells Mando that he wants his armor back, and of course that's the armor that Mando took from Cobb Vanth a couple episodes ago. And because Boba never took the Mandalorian oath, Mando won't hand it over. And we find out that Finnick is also there with a sniper rifle trained on Grogu, and there's a tense moment of standoff here until everyone agrees to put their weapons away and they talk. And we find out that Boba saved Finnick on Tatooine somehow, off screen, turned her into more machine than woman now.
at least her belly parts.
Yeah, and then we see another ship fly over and stormtroopers flood out.
Can replace your bowels with hydraulics. That's all. Like, yeah, I.
Yeah.
Star Wars is going to be added to the wide shelf of shows where I will no longer consider a character dead unless I actually see them expire.
Yeah.
And like a 2-1B medical droid comes flying in and says, they're dead. They're beyond the technology of Bacta.
Yeah, we run them through the Bacta dead. Tank. Nothing. No response. They're gone.
They're too sad to live like Padme. They're just going to die of broken heart. Like, I need something like that. I need a medical droid's opinion because she was dead. She was left for dead. That was the whole point of the episode, and now she's back. So,
yeah.
And, of course, this is coming from a character who I watched as a child die in a Sarlacc pit. So, I wanted, like, when I saw this episode's runtime of 30 minutes and then Boba Fett shows up, I immediately like, God damn, this is the one that should be 59 minutes because I want to catch up with Boba Fett. Like, how the fuck did you get out of there? Yeah. Why have you been spending so much time on Tatooine? Why did you never leave? Especially when some mook like Cobb Vance or whatever his name is has got your armor this whole time. Like, but in universe, it would make no sense to have that conversation because Mando doesn't know or care about the history of Boba Fett. And he's just some dude to him. And like Finnick probably, they've talked over campfires and her healing over her, you know, hydraulic gut wounds. So it's just not the time. But like, do you think we'll ever get some satisfying, like, how the hell did you get out of the Sarlacc kind of? Or I could also see Favreau doing the kind of thing where it's like they cut to a scene of like Mando and Finnick and Boba like talking. And that's how I got out of the Sarlacc pit. And Mando's like, sounds like a tough jam. And they just move on like.
I don't know. I feel like there's room for it, right? Like Mando and Boba are on this quest together now until they find Grogu. And there could be some downtime. You know, Mando in this standoff doesn't have the, I don't know, the reason to really ask more about like, oh, you were following me? Because I could see a path through where it's like, okay, well, Boba Fett was following Mando. Mando led him to his armor. He actually, how would he know where his armor is, right? But by following Mando through his quest, Boba Fett found the armor, and then now he's following Mando anyway. I don't know why he's following Mando in the first place. Maybe he thinks he's like Mando was earlier, where he thinks, you know, just following this thread of like, well, Mandalorian, armor, maybe I follow this guy. It's the only lead I got. Mm. It's a bad one, but I'll try it.
That's true. The Mandalorians seem to like they make the most of the very thin leads.
Oh, yeah.
But it is a really interesting question. Like, how did Boba Fett get out of Sarlacc pit?
Yeah.
How did he lose his armor? Like you're strong enough to escape the belly of a Sarlacc, or did you like take your armor off inside and climb out of its gullet and then it shit at the armor later and the Jawas are like, ooh, teeny, and they found it? Like, It is. It's a fact. And maybe they'd be better off not answering those questions because, again, it's like, you know, like, what's the timeline here? Why would he want to take it off a Mandalorian rather than, I don't know, a Jawa colony or this like relatively weak human marshal? So maybe they are better off staying away from that and letting other people fill it in. Because the other thing is, like, you know, we've been talking about spinoff characters, a Boba Fett. Like trilogy of movies or like a limited miniseries, kind of like the Punisher to the Daredevil on the MCU side, that would do massive numbers. And I don't know.
I think there's been talk of that. I think it's rumored that they're going to do some kind of Boba Fett miniseries maybe. But I don't know. We'll see.
And Tamir Morrison can still fill out the armor. I mean, he really fills it out, but he brings this kind of Jake DeMuss energy to the role. It's a real ferocity, and it's something else. In and out of armor, he looks the business.
I like the offense he takes to the, you know, taking the Mandalorian oath. I give my allegiance to no one, and then moments later, he's signed a pact here to. Safely to guarantee Grogu's safety. I know it's a trade, right. But it's also allegiance in a sort of weird way.
Plus, yeah, he got that into himself. It's not no one made him do that. And he's also like, you know, he's quoting his dad, I'm just a simple man trying to make my way through the galaxy. It's cool. It's all pretty cool. But also, I don't know why you couldn't say, hey, check the armor blockchain or block code. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll see this fight can all be, but I guess the Imperials kind of forced this episode's paced like relentlessly. It's like one goddamn thing happens another. You land, you jetpack, the Force activates, Boba Fett's here, you get in a fight with them, you give up your jetpack, bam, here comes the stormtroopers. There's never any moment that kind of like, hey, let's talk this over like Boba suggests.
Yeah. It's a series of ships flying overhead and people going, "Oh shit." So I gotta know more about Finnick's situation, like how this all happened, the guts being totally replaced with robotics, like I said, more machine than woman now. It's like Did he replace her entire bowels with this machinery? Did he, like, how far up does this machinery go? Is she?
Oh, yeah. It's 33 feet of Duracell tubing now. It's...
did he take her to the Jawas and they did this? Like, I don't know what's going on here, but they don't.
It is. Yeah, it is funny because when they showed her, when she opened her belly, I think there'd be like tubes and stuff, but it's like essentially a scaled up version of what was in Luke Skywalker's palms. Just like these little weird hydraulic pulley systems and stuff. I'm like, well, I mean, I guess that makes sense. That's her abdominal muscles. You'd have to replace abdominal muscles of this woman. You'd have to replace that. But like, yeah, I was hoping for some tubing. I was hoping for some techno looking snow lizard guts or something. Tauntaun, yeah. That's what I was trying to think
there's
of.
There's a lot of complicated gut works you got to replace, and I don't know if Luke's hand is gonna make that happen. Luke's hand doesn't have to digest food and provide nutrients for the body.
Yeah, and like what else is, like how far does it go up? Did they replace, you know, I think Star Wars can replace just about anything. Like look at Darth Vader, but...
Yeah. But can Boba Fett on a backwoods desert planet in the
so
Outer Rim?
There's so much sand in there. Yeah, they got so much sand. So much sand in the wound. It's going to take forever to get all that out.
I mean, obviously, gets everywhere. Everywhere. Mando runs back to Grogu to find him still meditating. He still can't penetrate this force barrier, even though he's going to try not once, not twice, but at least three times this episode. And so Boba and Fennec are fighting off stormtroopers, trying to keep them at bay. This is a long action scene here. Anything you want to talk about?
I mean, stormtroopers still just refuse to take cover. There's natural cover all around this, and they're still running right up the gauntlet, like riding into the kill zone. Some of them have the temerity to like complain about their lot, like, oh, there's too much fire. Flank them, you idiots. Yeah, try to flank. Try to use some cover. Try to use some suppressive fire while your other buddy, like, there's... Wouldn't it be cool to see stormtroopers be... I mean, I feel like that this is not the show. The double Fs, Fellini and Favreau, are not going to do this. They think it's funny that the stormtroopers are this comically inept. But it would be nice to see some rank and file stormtroopers that have a couple brain cells and to make the heroes actually have to work, you know. But the heroes are no better. Like the Mandalorian's idea of getting in a firefight, landing in the middle of stuff and letting his Beskar tank shots while he just, you know, flinches a few every third hit and guns people down in the open. So it,
I mean, he's got
it's
that
a very,
luxury.
It's very G.I. Joe fighting style, even down to the like you can't even do really horrific things to people unless it's like a robot or they're, you know, like you can pulp a human being's head as long as it's shrink wrapped in plasteel armor, because like some of those gaffy stick hits of Boba just tomato can these guys' heads.
Yeah.
But I guess their inner body glove just soaks all that stuff up, because not even a trickle of like tomato juice ever runs out of their helmets or down their seams, even though they're just being pulverized by this, I guess, vibro stick, because it made that it didn't make the weird pseudo motion, but every time it hit, it made this like thunderclap, which I thought was really cool.
I didn't even notice that. I thought that was just a stylistic thing.
It
they
could
were doing
be,
with the sound effects
because
of the music.
Like Boba Fett's that big of a badass that, like, you know, and he even sold it like he's a big man, you know, putting some mass behind these swings. So even without any kind of technological sophistication, I think these stormtroopers are gonna have a bad time. But he's just opening them up like so many crab shells, getting their meat out.
Yeah. And they're really going for broke with the soundtrack here. And I don't know if it totally works for me. It's a little bit like too electronic, a little too like not John Williams-y enough, not Star Wars-y feeling enough for me. But like
The Mandalorian does
holy
have
shit,
a
it's a lot.
Very, it has a very un-Williams-y feel. Like even the main theme has got very weird kind of tribal woodwinds kind of stuff going on with it.
Western.
Stormtroopers having artillery was kind of cool. Apparently they have a whole branch of stormtroopers in yellow armor that do boom tube stuff for the Empire. I thought that was pretty cool.
Those guys know better of a shot, though.
They it took them a while to bracket fire. They don't have any kind of helmet, you know, heads up range finder and stuff like that. That's exclusive. That's licensed and patented by Boba Fett. Nobody else in Empire can have it. What did you think about Finnick Indiana Jonesing the entire squad of stormtroopers with the boulder?
With the boulder. All of this action stuff is meant to be just taken as, oh, it's cool. Like, none of it makes sense. Absolutely none of it. Her running across the ridge line of a hill while she's being shot with a repeating blaster is like the most insane thing to do when she could simply duck behind the thing.
Duck behind
them
the ridge,
setting up a repeating blaster anyway on this terrain. Well, on this terrain, like, it's so hilly, you're going to line up a shot, and three seconds later, it's going to be gone. You're going to have to dismantle it. It takes 45 seconds, move it over to the next place, set it up. It's an ineffective weapon in this terrain, and whatever. Like, that's not what the scene is about, right? The scene is about looking cool, showing us some awesome stuff happening, and us just sitting back and enjoying it, and I thought it was fine in that regard.
Yeah, one of these days I think they'll figure out, I don't know, maybe this isn't a show, but it's actually really cool to have smaller scale battles that are really smart and tactical as it is to have like three people mow down 50 mooks, you know?
Yeah, I kind of like the one that they had back on, I think it was on Navarro when Moff Gideon first shows up, you know, and the flamethrower stuff and they're like pinned down.
Oh, yeah,
I thought all that stuff was really good. And then they've gone on and done stuff like this where it's like, I'll just have to turn my brain off and enjoy it.
Yeah. And that's fine. That's, you know, I've seen Machete and I've seen El Mariachi and all that other stuff. The Rodriguez's touch. He's very good with action. And I was happy to see it. And I actually like Fennec's design. Like, her armor is really cool. It reminds me of like mid-level Destiny Warlock armor, but it looks very cool. And her, like, you know, they sell the story of it becoming an increasingly desperate fight. Like, you know, she's down, like, maybe running out of bullets, and she's throwing helmets, and just when things look tough, the Mandalorian gets there and starts, you know, saving things with his wrist rockets and tanking shots with his armor, and then Boba the Hulk lands.
Yeah,
and
kicks their asses.
It's a moment.
It drives them out. Like,
and in fact, he looks amazing doing everything, even with this like armor. It's clearly seen better days. It's just strapped over his dark Jedi robes and whatnot. It's not a complete set at this point. But I will say, now that I've seen it happen three times, I don't think the Boba Fett should have to bend over to shoot his rocket. That just looks fundamentally silly, and I can't believe we've had three directors now, I guess two directors, like, okay that and be like, you know what? It's obviously a homing missile. It's the important thing is getting the lock, and then have we never seen a cruise missile launch from a submarine or something? Like, you don't have to, like, help it. You don't have to get it, like, you know, within 15 degrees of its flight path to launch, and it's always this like little half bow that they do, just always looks so, and it looks really silly when thick ass Boba's doing it. I don't know.
Yeah,
Boba doesn't need to turn his body to shoot his rocket. I'm sorry, he just doesn't. He needs to get a target lock and then launch that sucker, and then forget about it. Which, also, cool guys don't look at explosions. There's that, you know, I was actually aiming for the other one, which, on second watch, I just happened to look for it. It's true. He was targeting the other thing. Does that mean Boba Fett canonically just misses things, or?
Yeah, that's a little disappointing. Maybe he's rusty. You know, he hasn't used the armor in a while. He just got out of a Sarlacc pit. Maybe he's, you know, feeling
the
effects.
And Cobb said the armor is damaged, obviously, you know, the it had sustained some damage. So maybe it's just not firing right. Maybe the targeting system uses the rule of cool, because I did think it was pretty fucking cool that he took out two of those transports with one shot.
Yeah, for sure.
It's
remarkable to me. Like, the way they're using stormtroopers is like, they are whatever they need them to be in the moment, because when they're fighting Fennec, they can't hit a damn thing. She can be standing there in the open. They can take 100 shots at her. Not a single one lands. When Mando flies in with his Beskar armor, which is impenetrable, they just start landing shot after shot after shot on him.
Kill
shots. 15
Kill
shots, shots a second. Yeah. Boom, boom, boom. Yep. You're done, man. Fuck you. And then they're spinning. Like, there's a scene where they are spinning back to back, right? Defending each other. When Mando's in the front, he's taking shots. When Fennec's in the front, they're missing so wide, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, man. It's so fucking ridiculous. I don't care. Like, whatever. It's funny, but...
Yeah, it's funny because I guess it's everyone's personal taste, because there's some stuff where I'm like, yes, give me more. And then they get to I thought that was particularly egregious. The fact that he's essentially covering her in some kind of rote, like, oh, here comes incoming blast. Let me spin around and take those. And like, OK, are you a Jedi or what the fuck? I do want to call out one other thing.
Oh, boy.
Boba Fett's wrist rocket. Him using that to punch a stormtrooper and fire the rocket to send this trooper into low Earth orbit. That's pretty choice. It's a lot of fun watching Boba Fett beat up Imperials. I'm sorry. It's a lot of fun him justifying his reputation in live action finally. As an old man too.
Yeah.
So
yeah, these aren't even the glory days. The other thing, speaking of firing wrist rockets, it's strange to me that Mando earlier in this episode, when he first meets Boba Fett and he's trying to intimidate him, is cocking his wrist rockets. He's cocking wrist rockets. What does that even mean? He pulls up his wrist, sort of half aims it at Boba, and blue light flashes and a thing moves. What possible function could cocking a rocket on your wrist serve?
I don't know. It's
It's a weird feature to have.
It's, you bend your wrist 75 degrees down and it just does an intimidation display. Full 90 degrees down, and that's what the final. It's like a trigger. I guess it makes sense because it's triggers and guns aren't usually binary. There's a finite amount of pressure that finally breaks and triggers. You want your hidden wrist rockets to be able to intimidate some people every once in a while.
I guess.
Why not? Speaking of the actor that plays Fennec, Ming-Na Wen, she's 57 years old.
No.
Temuera Morrison's only a year older than her, and he looks like he's been digested in a Sarlacc pit.
Jesus.
I cannot believe how well-preserved this bounty hunter is. I'm going to have to get all my guts replaced by plasteel tubing because, holy moly. What an accomplishment. What an accomplishment.
When 57 years old,
I just want to point that out and Boba are only 18 months apart in birthday terms, but
that's crazy.
Good Lord.
So Moff Gideon shows up and fires from above, blasting the Razor Crest into shrapnel, and he engages the Dark Troopers as Boba scrambles back up to his ship, and Mando and Finnick go after Grogu. Four Dark Troopers land and fly off with Grogu. Boba is able to follow them in Slave One and seize Gideon's ship. So they at least know who's got Grogu, as if they hadn't any question about that.
Yeah, the Razor Crest getting blown up is actually kind of a moment, because
I wish it were a bigger moment. I wish it had some buildup. I wish it wasn't just completely out of the blue. I don't know. I like the Razor Crest as a ship. I wish there was more fanfare around it before it blew up.
That's my question. Is the only way I see, because I thought the Razor Crest was a cool looking ship, and the fact it was a pre-imperial, kind of rare that it's, it's got these nice things for mercenaries and bounty hunter features. Is he going to get another Razor Crest, or are they setting this up that he inherits Slave One?
And how
does he inherit Slave One? There's no way he inherits Slave One unless Boba Fett's dead.
Yeah.
I don't see Boba Fett just I came to reclaim my armor. Why don't you take my dad's ship now?
Uh-huh.
How do they write themselves out of him? Because he needs a cool ship. He does.
He does. He absolutely needs a ship. And Slave One is the only place I can really see him getting one, unless he can go to Kara or whatever and say
a lot of kids have Razor Crest Lego sets under Christmas trees right now.
It's true.
And
I didn't even think
what's
about
that gonna be like, open it out and then it's like, oh well, the Razor Crest is blown up, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Let's tune in next season to see what your new kit's gonna be like. I feel bad, although I don't know if kids really care about that stuff. Maybe it's more like, oh, I can't wait to get the new thing. But
I do wish it was a bigger moment. But I mean, as far as ship goes, you gotta kill Boba Fett if you want the Slave One to go to anyone else.
I would think.
And if
so,
you're gonna kill Boba Fett, you have to make it on his own terms. He has to sacrifice himself, knowing that he's gonna die. And you know, look, Favreau's great at this, right? Like, the heroic sacrifice is, he is no stranger to that.
Yeah, sure.
So he can do that scene, and he can do it well, and he can make, he can, in that moment, make Boba Fett a bigger hero than he already is, or a bigger badass than he already is, because I don't know that he's a hero. And it's the only way they can do it.
What'd you think about the first appearance of the Dark Troopers? We speculated about those a few episodes back and talked about their history in the Dark Forces games.
Unimpressive.
Well, I feel like they look like the Mark Ones. They're just kind of like like upscaled combat droids. They're not like the real hulking ones. They certainly aren't the ones. I mean, these are recognizably droids. I thought they're not.
Yeah.
They're not people in suits, and that's clearly where this project is going, both in the old legends and then the new Star Wars canon, it seems like.
Well, we don't get to see him do anything, right? Like, this could have been anything with a jetpack. This could have been, I don't know, a stormtrooper, stormtrooper.
Gonk power generator droid.
Yeah.
With a jetpack on it. Yeah,
they did nothing. You wouldn't even need a droid to do this. You could just, you know, send down some
kind of
drone,
if they did have scripted a fight with these guys, because you're right, now that you mention it, like, sending the squad down to just kidnap an unconscious baby Yoda after he's already dropped his shield. Like, it'd have been kind of badass if they, like, forced their way through the force shield or something. It's like, oh, well, they're slightly resistant to the force, but just going and picking him up and then taking off and using the, you know, Grogu as a human shield, or I guess a Yoda shield. I wonder if they did have something bigger and they just decided, like, hey, there wasn't the budget or time for it, because, you know, it's just got a huge budget, and obviously the mouse has got a lot of money, but it's not unlimited. So
no, I did enjoy the flip and burn that they do. We're always talking about that in The Expanse, and they definitely do a flip and burn here, decelerating
they
burn.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, really cool. I think they look cool. I'm curious to see, like, so what is the odds here? Is one Dark Trooper bot worth a Mandalorian? Is, like, four of them worth the Mandalorian? Like, what is, because obviously 40 Stormtroopers can kind of sort of keep Boba Fett, Finnick, and the Mandalorian, if he's distracted, busy for 5 minutes. Like, it's not, and you know.
And if,
like,
he doesn't have his armor,
So I wonder, what is the conversion rate for, you know, is a Dark Trooper worth 10 Stormtroopers, 100 Stormtroopers? I'm really curious to see how badass they are. And of course, if this follows anything like the Legends stuff, they'll just keep scaling up until you get the final version. It's going to be a real fucking handful.
Yeah. So Mando surveys the crater that used to be a ship, and he picks up the gear shift knob, the ball, whatever, as well as his Beskar spear. And then Boba proves to Mando that the armor belongs to him by showing him some chain code from the suit. And Mando agrees to give it back. Boba says the deal they made requires them to help him find Grogu, bring him back to safety. So
I interpret this as being like Boba Fett's a foundling's foundling, like, literally. And, like, I don't think that any obligation, verbal obligation, he would go all in on. But, like, the fact that, like, another Mandalorian just had its foundling stolen from him on a quest, like, and we all also know that, like, Boba Fett's not the exact same branch of a Mandalorian whack job that the Mandalorian's from, because he obviously shows his face and doesn't seem like there's any shameful of, but, like, you know, he does follow the code. Like, he is from the branch that recognizes the obligations that foundlings put on the people that find them. I thought that stuff was really cool. And if Boba and the Mandalorian, Jin, are going to be palling around, this is going to give them a good opportunity to talk through some of that, like, Mandalorian cult shit that I'm really fascinated by. Like, you know, I think that that'd be really cool. Really cool conversations, and are great. They got time and opportunity to have them.
Speaking of those conversations, let's talk a little bit about Boba Fett. I don't know much about Boba Fett other than the stuff I read from the now non-canon legend stuff way back in the day, like Tales of the Bounty Hunter. There's an Easter egg, I think, in this scene where Boba Fett shows Mando the chain code, and in it you see all the Orbesh, or whatever it's called, the language of Star Wars, the writing. People have translated that, and it might, I haven't gone and translated it myself. I don't know. I'm taking the word of the people, like, I saw on Reddit. In there, it's sort of like a, you know, find the word kind of, like, circle the word kind of puzzle. and you can see Concord is in there, and then Mentor Jast, J-A-S-T-E, is in there. Now, what I remember from Tales of the Bounty Hunters, Boba Fett's name, his actual real name, is Jaster Mereel. And so, like, mm-hmm. having this Mentor Jast in there is, in my opinion, like an Easter egg to that. And then this Concord in there is an Easter egg of, like, the retconning they did to him in 2002 with the Boba Fett Year One or something like that. I forget what it's called. The name of the Dark Horse comics that kind of explore Jaster Mereel's background and how he connects to Jango Fett.
Yeah, I think that this is an attempt to kind of, like, you know, retcon for all time these things, because, you know, I think the modern lore is essentially Jaster Mereel is the benefactor of Jango. He's the founder of the mentor. Jango.
Yeah.
So it's like all this stuff about, like, oh, it's Jaster Mereel's armor and it's his ship. Like, all that stuff is kind of true from a certain point of view because they're all in the same lineage and they all have the fact that, like, you know, there's people that I just saw last week, people getting heated canon debates on r/ The Mandalorian TV about whether, in fact, Boba Fett was a Mandalorian or not. There is a lot of this kind of, you know, it depends who you ask and depends on when you stopped reading Star Wars novels and whether you've kept up on it and whether you've seen Rebels and Clone Wars and all that kind of the Dark Horse comics. But I do think that this is an attempt to try to get a definitive, like, well, all these were kind of sort of true. Like, you got bits and you got bits and pieces of the truth. And if for a guy like Boba Fett, who's shrouded in kind of mystery by design anyway, I think that's kind of interesting. But it's also a little bit like nailing Jell-O to a tree, because they do this in Marvel with fucking Wolverine, where, like, what is his actual backstory? How old is he? Which wars did he fight in? And did he fight it as a Canadian or an American? I don't know. And there could be a movie where they try to, like, take all the stories and streamline it and make it, like, actually true. But I mean, shit. I guess now they're whatever they're doing is they're committing to it. And I think that all those little, what you're calling as Easter eggs, is signs to the fans that are like, no, this is now the page that everybody needs to be on. This is the new updated Wikipedia article. Everything else has been deprecated.
So they weren't doing that in 2002 when they changed Jaster Mereel to not be Boba Fett, but to be Jango's mentor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the other thing, is because I remember reading, because I tried to get to the bottom of, like, this Boba Fett stuff a couple weeks ago. And I remember, like, the anti-Mandalorian sect of fan base of Jango or of Boba fans, they hung this hat on, like, Dave Filoni talked of George Lucas when he's setting down to do the Clone Wars and Rebels. And they had, like, a bunch of ground rules. And I guess one of them was that George said adamantly that Boba Fett is not a real Mandalorian. And there's, like, quotes in the, like, Rebels and Clone Wars to that effect, too. So it's like, now it's like, I guess the only difference is, like, Disney itself is stamping it and saying, this is, we're filming it. This isn't just hearsay. This isn't just a comic book or an animated kid show. This is actually live action Star Wars, which has always been the most canon you can get, you know? So I don't know. I feel like this
how do you
is...
define a Mandalorian? Is it taking that oath? Because, you know, if it's taking the Mandalorian oath, then Boba here says,
well,
that he hasn't done that.
And I think there's already people trying to see because there's one character, I think his name's Almec, that made a very definitive statement about Boba Fett not being a Mandalorian in these cartoons. And people are already being like, well, he would say that because it was in the context of a Mandalorian civil war. And he's very clearly trying to.
No true Mandalorian. Is that where we're
going? Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, no, it's exactly what it is. He's essentially, yeah, like gatekeeping Mandalorian for political and propaganda purposes, which fine, you know. But I actually think it adds a lot of color to the universe that it's not one way to be a Mandalorian. Like, what does that even mean? Like, how are Corellians? Yeah. You can't even describe what a Terran is like in 2020. Like, much less, like, describe how a Corellian behaves or a Mon Calamari. The fact that there's, like, all these factions and political things from a faction that has recently fought a civil war over some of these doctrinal. I think that's really cool and makes the universe seem a lot bigger and more realistic than all Mandalorians believe a certain way and they think of this and da da da. You know, very mm-hmm. very like Star Trek does their alien species.
Yeah, for sure. So then they take Slave One to Nevarro, where Mando asks Cara Dune, now Marshal of the New Republic, to look up Mayfeld, who is the guy who he stranded on that prison ship last season, Bill Burr.
Billy Burr, yeah.
He's doing time, apparently, for that whole incident. but Mando needs to break him out to locate Moff Gideon. Why? I could not tell you. I can't possibly tell you what a sharpshooter that has... Maybe it's his Nebulous. It's literally the only guy he knows who has Imperial connections whatsoever in the entire universe, so he's going to go bust him out of a prison.
I feel it's like Ocean's 11, you know, when like Danny Ocean and Brad Pitt are talking about, it's like, hey, we're going to need a Grease Monkey, we're going to need a Florence Nightingale, we're going to need Ella Fitzgerald,
Imperial.
A Monkey Man, and yeah, and like, and the, this is their Ella Fitzgerald, you know, like you need, sure. Hey, got to have an ex-Imperial sharpshooter, because we're going to have to send a turbo laser bolt down a tumbler lock, and it's the only thing. Yeah, it's like, okay, the you know, Mando's good at what he does, he knows what he needs, this is a guy who can do it. It is weird that you can't find, after this galactic civil war, you can't like throw a stick and hit an ex-Imperial sniper with flexible morals. You got to find the guy who's locked up on some kind of hell world, no doubt, under maximum security.
Yeah, you're telling me Grief can't find a single Imperial, like ex-Imperial person who might point you in the right direction. It's
plus they also describe Finnick as a sharpshooter. Like, is this guy sharper shooter?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, she can hit the Mandalorian from a mile away anytime she wants. You need something. Maybe you need two sharpshooters. We'll have to see.
Yeah. So then Gideon goes to see the imprisoned Grogu, who's using the Force to manhandle the guards in his cell. And Gideon has Grogu stunned and restrained, and then he tells his underling to let Dr. Pershing know they have their donor. Boy, I haven't looked for the memes, but my God, there have to be memes everywhere for these cuffs.
Yeah, it's more of like, Moff Gideon say, fetch me the teeniest, weeniest little cuffy wuffies. You know, it's like, well, how would you describe these things in the Imperial Armory? Like, order... manacles extra small, like three fingered. I
believe the Empire makes it routine to handcuff babies. I believe I would believe
of course. Shackle them sons of bitches before they can even crawl. Treat them that it's you can't crawl away from the Empire. There's no young, too young an age to have that discussion with a baby. It is fucking hilarious, though. It's both funny and adorable and sad to see him just like passed out, all shackled up and whatnot.
It's the best kind of stupid. I like it.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of like Stranger Things 11 here with Moff Gideon like training this child to like hate and do violence and encouraging it to do it just the like way that, you know, Eleven was raised.
Brenner, is that his name?
Yeah, okay. Was it? Yeah, I was trying to think of what his name. It's badass and cool, but also you feel bad watching it because, you know, Baby Yoda doesn't want to do this stuff. He just wants to commit genocide against frog people and you commit petty theft against children all day. Just beating up stormtroopers is too far on the moral grayscale for us, but. Yeah, I mean, Moff Gideon's a real asshole. It's fun to see. I don't think I've ever seen Giancarlo Esposito play this kind of villain. He's a lot more playful and like emotive, you know, like he's not like super tightly buttoned down. He's just he's a powerful guy and he's in control and he's living large and in charge.
It's like the Darth Vader version of his characters in Breaking Bad and Westworld. It's like those two combined with Darth Vader. It's kind of the style he's going for. Yeah, it works for me, for sure.
He taunts him with the Darksaber, but he's like, have you seen one of these before? And I wasn't sure if he's specifically referring to the Darksaber or if he's talking about like a lightsaber in general, because obviously Baby Yoda would have.
Yeah, probably the Darksaber.
Did we talk about whether Cara Dune is going to be joining the party? Because they leave it ambiguous. Everyone seemed to assume that she was, you know, when he said, hey, I hate the Empire as much as anybody, but these stripes mean something to me now. And he's like, but they've got the child. And she kind of like gives him a hard look. I guess it's going to be Boba, Kara, Fennec, Mando, and Mayfield, and maybe a couple others is my guess.
Maybe. I didn't take that to mean I'm all in. I didn't either.
I was actually shocked to see everyone just assuming that, like, yeah, like the memes were to the effect that, like, you know, hey, I can't do this. Well, the, what about the child? Oh, you son of a bitch, I'm in. I'm like, eh, maybe.
Yeah. And I guess the bigger open question here is, what did Grogu's meditation actually accomplish in this episode? Because that is the biggest dead end of a clue that they've ever had, right? Like, the Jedi were supposed to come. He was supposed to connect with them. He did, but nothing came of it. Absolutely nothing. And now everybody is gone from that planet. Do the Jedi now, you know, have an awareness of Grogu's existence or something? Like, they've honed in on him, and so they can track him through space now? Or, I mean, we'll see in the future. I don't think it's a completely dead end. I don't think they're going to just drop that.
In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the third act of the next episode or the climactic episode is just when all things look lost and Boba's lost his last rocket and his last knee dart and the Mando's out of wrist rockets and, you know, Fennec's sharpshooter gets cut in half.
Her guts have malfunctioned from all the sand inside of her.
Yeah, she's shitting and going blind simultaneously because her eyes are robotic, too. As the Dark Trooper Mark IIs are advancing, you know, some lightsaber shoves through a bulkhead and cuts a hole, and some asshole we've never heard of before is going to be there to save the day.
Drop Jedi.
But also, it reminds me of one of those Drop Jedi. Yeah, everyone's dropping these episodes. Droids, stormtroopers, everybody. One of those things. It's like when you reach out connection to make a connection, it's a two way thing. Like you can make connection with the Jedi, but like also what if Sith, you know, like any kind of like that powerful of a force manifestation. I'm wondering if this is going to be a story hook for a season to come, that like, you know, every once in a while, a Jedi or a Sith is going to cross a path and be hunting him down because he just put him on blast, essentially. The Empire, the shards of the Empire have been looking for the child thus far, but now you've got all the disparate bands of, you know, Jedi in exile and, you know, Sith are going to be looking for him too.
Darth Maul, why not? Let's get Darth
Maul. Yeah, bring Maul back. He's still kicking around.
Sure.
It's going to be the pit boys. Everyone has drugged themselves out of a bottomless pit. It's going to be coming back for the Mandalorian.
And he puts up
Palpatine. Palpatine already drugged himself out of a pit for the sequel. So,
Boba Fett boys. Pieced back together both of those guys. their guts
the pit
are all
boy era. Yeah.
The pit boys are back, baby. Love it.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, that's it for the episode. Do we have feedback?
We do. We do. You can reach us at mando@baldmove.com each and every week. We also have a thread on forums.baldmove.com if you want to argue if Boba Fett is a Mandalorian or not. I mean, shit, what is even canon, you know? Wait five years, it'll change. First up is Claire said, hey, I thought Jim might like to know that the official Star Wars The Child Lego lists the little silver ball as a Razor Crest shifter knob, so you can continue to call it that.
What does that mean?
You're shifting hyperspace gears, man. And you need a knob for it.
Sure. Why not? I'm just calling it the knob. But, you know, the British have kind of cornered the market on the slang knob. I can't really call it playing with Mando's knob.
Yeah. Come on, Grogu. Stop polishing that knob and let's get serious. quit polishing your little knob. No, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when he goes through the teenage years, that might be a problem. He's 125, he'll be hitting puberty.
Sounds about right.
Adam W., when Ahsoka mentioned that she only knew one other being like Baby Yoda, I was also immediately skeptical that she didn't cross paths with Yaddle. I was so skeptical that I paused the show to check Yaddle's Wikipedia page and was surprised to read that it seems like this all checks out. Yaddle apparently took a less active role in the Jedi Order's affairs after the Battle of Naboo and was no longer in the High Council by the time of the Clone Wars. I've not watched the Clone Wars animated series, so not entirely sure where Ahsoka enters the picture, so I could be wrong. No, a couple people sent this in to us, and it seems like you are right.
It does seem like it is
literally a Wikipedia entry that says, well, this is what happened to her because she never showed up again.
Is this from like some soon to be retconned Lucas era novel that was written
right
about the Jedi
Council?
Probably
a footnote of like some kind of limited edition Star Wars comic book, but that's a story, and we're sticking to it. I just think it's weird that no one in the Jedi Council talks about Yoda's species. Like, is it really that mysterious when they had two of them running around in the Jedi Council within a few years? Like, you know, like, oh, what was Yaddle and Yoda again? Oh, I don't know. Anyway, Frankie R. said, I haven't heard you guys talk at all about what's actually one of the most interesting parts of the show, which is the tech that drives the billion-dollar look and feel of The Mandalorian. If you have time, and I know you'll enjoy it if you watch it, I highly suggest watching the making of season 1 6-part series on Disney Plus called Disney Gallery Star Wars: The Making of the Mandalorian. They've been pushing this at the end of every Mandalorian, and I started watching it. I'm on like episode 3. They're short episodes, but I'd highly suggest episodes 4 and 5, which break down some of the breathtaking advances and throwbacks the show has taken in producing cutting edge visual and practical effects for TV. Have you seen any of these, Jim? Because I actually watched this. They got some cool shit. In particular, I want to talk about something they called the volume. Are you aware of this thing?
No.
It's essentially a set the size of a half-court basketball, and it's about 3 stories high, and it's got curved, like, you know, all the edges are curved, and it's an entire I can't tell if it's projected or all LED. But they're able to.
Oh, right. And they shoot lasers at the ceiling. They play Pink Floyd. And you're supposed to get high and go see this room?
Yes. Okay. That's what they do after hours. But during shooting hours, they're actually able to put this fully immersive 360-degree background. Like, they aren't green screening Mandalorian. They're standing him in front of, like, when they put him on Tatooine. He's in this incredibly high-res 3D environment. And the advantages of that are manifold. And the way they use it is really ingenious. Like, for example, they'll take the Jawas sandcrawler tank tread, and that's a real physical prop that's in the room. And then there's like a little bit of plating that goes up against the wall, and it all seamlessly blends into the set. So when they shoot this with a camera, they get depth of field and the background kind of looks blurry, and you can't tell it's a screen, but all of like the reflections you get of Mando's armor,
like they get all that stuff for free. The lighting looks right because it's able to project the like accurate lighting of this sky color at this day. They want it just looks like they're really excited by it, and it looks really next level. And what's really interesting is we recently got our hands on some screeners for the new season of The Expanse, and I don't want to spoil anything, obviously, but I think they're using the same technology. Because there's a scene of someone riding in an elevator where I thought it was it's pretty obvious that they weren't actually moving through this space. They were just projecting shit on monitors and stuff. Huh. And I just think it's a really, I don't know, it feels like the next generation of blue screens. Because if you're just wanting to shoot like a star background behind someone, especially if someone's in a foreground and a background's kind of out of focus anyway, why take the time to composite that shit? Just put them in front of a big LED screen and have them lit realistically. And when you're close enough, you could tell, put a physical prop there. But so many shots were done at this new technology. It's really I thought it was one of the more fascinating things. It reminded me a lot of like the behind the scenes Weta shit from the Lord of the Rings stuff I've been watching, where people are just giddy about this new toy and all the possibilities. Like in the first season, it's just something they did. They like cut costs and like save time. But in this second season, they started actually thinking like, wow, how could we actually build sets to take advantage of this and make things bigger and more expansive? And it's really cool. And I just essentially stole the rest of Frankie's comment in my enthusiasm for the volume. But it's really cool. And the way that the camera seems like it's synchronized to it. So as it moves, like the background moves and gives realistic like parallax scrolling. And they can like digitally clean stuff up later because it all synced to like the movements and stuff. And they use the Unreal Engine is what powers this like three-dimensional space that they texture and light and do all that kind of stuff. But it's cool. You ought to check it out. I imagine that this is going to be like used for all your favorite, especially Disney properties. Oh, my God. MCU is going to be using this tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But I thought I saw them using it in Expanse, too. It's going to be... It's the next level thing. Should check it out. Finally, the Donald has a concern about the pacing of the show. Says the first season was slow and methodical and didn't really reveal anything at all until the final episode. The first half of this season seemed to be following much the same route. Maybe a little more information, but slow. And as Aaron pointed out, a lot of side quests in the RPG that we're all watching. But these last few episodes feel like they're skipping all that fun stuff and just blitzing right to the end. I'm also annoyed that the Mandalorian show is less about Mando and more about Baby Yoda. I was really looking forward to Mando having to come to grips with being in a cult, his past and his position in Mandalorian culture, but it seems to be going away from that and leaning towards more epic Jedi Empire conflict, aka the same old Star Wars shit.
yeah, it's definitely slow playing the Mando stuff for sure. And I guess I'm okay with
Donald's comments here.
I don't know. It is formulaic. Absolutely, the show is formulaic. It's like I described it at the opening of this thing. It's go to a planet, solve a problem, get a tiny bit of a clue if you're lucky to the next tiny bit of a clue that's going to point you to the next one over and over. And I guess if you're not in for that, then, you know, this show isn't going to please you. But I guess that's fine. That's fine to me.
And I guess it's like, what is the story engine, you know, because in the first season, it was like, what is this thing? The second is, this is what this thing is. You have to return it to its people. I don't know how long that can be a story engine. Like, can you do 5 seasons in the Mando just continually trying to get Baby Yoda to where he needs to go and is continually frustrated in the effort? Or eventually is like the child going to be trained one way or another? And I also feel like having the Baby Yoda being kidnapped might be potentially a long-term solution to your problem of, you know, not getting enough Mando action, because like I'm looking forward to the next few episodes because I think it's going to give this opportunity to have a Mandalorian discussing with fellow Mandalorians what it means to be a Mandalorian and kind of figuring out for himself. So I think that's really cool. And like, honestly, I wouldn't even be mad if Baby Yoda is gone the rest of this season and big parts of next season. Like if it becomes like next arc is just like rescuing Baby Yoda and assembling. I don't think they're going to do that. But like, I don't know. I mean, that's always the danger of once you get into some, like once you stop just stalling and start telling a story, it needs a, It needs a middle, which is usually tricky, and it needs a conclusion. And those are, it's really easy to start cool things. Big open-ended mysteries with a sprawling world that you're designing. But as you make more stuff real, we've seen it over and over and over again. Creating new things also are handcuffs on the creator, because you can't, that's you can't go back and change that now, right?
Yeah.
The possibilities that initially are infinite start closing down and become the, you know, what's the logical thing to do next? And, you know, these, like, you know, Mandalorian next season is going to be a middle-aged show, and it's going to start having those problems. I think it's less affecting this show, because this show's never been about, like, its plotting. It's always been about, it's a really cool Star Wars universe with a really cool central character and a really cute sidekick, you know?
Right.
So
Much cuter than Chewie.
Yeah, but if you're really concerned about the Mandalorian developing as a character, I think these next two episodes are going to be good for that. And also, I do think the Mandalorian has developed. Like, he was such an emotionally stunted, you know, traumatized child in the first few episodes of season one. And now, like, you know, imagine him laughing with his baby child, you know, on, kind of burbling on his lap. Like, you just can't imagine that last. He's made a lot of progress in terms of being like a parent and a guardian and relying on friends and making friendships and stuff. Like, you know, you always thought the Mandalorian is kind of a loner before, and now he's got a pretty regular crew of people he can rely on, both friends and frenemies and everything in between. So,
yeah, he's definitely just changing.
You can't expect this. Look, this is never going to be, it's never going to be Breaking Bad or The Wire, you know, like maybe one day the mouse will let someone do a really gritty mercenary bounty hunter show or a rebel cop show or something like that. But I think that's a limit. That's a limitation to Disney. They can't do it. It's like, I don't know that I would trade the entire MCU for something like Logan. But it's pretty fucking close. I mean, it's just sad to know that no matter how many years this goes on, we're never going to get something like that. Like a really dark, like something that really does just, like, we're never going to get a Wolverine movie out of Disney that really does justice to his character like we did out of, what is it, was it Sony or one of the other people that had their mitts on the X-Men? Fox Studios.
It's so weird to me, though, because, like, the dipping of the toe into that, that was Rogue One. Like, I don't think it feels like super Star Wars-y, that movie, because it's, you know, doesn't have a happy ending and all this stuff. But, like, people loved it. Star Wars fans love Rogue One more than any of the new era Star Wars movies, right? In a lot of cases, except maybe The Force Awakens.
That's universal, because, Jesus, I don't know that anything's been universally beloved other than Mandalorian in the last 5 years. But, like, I like it because it was. It's a PG-13 Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, they dipped their toe into it, and a lot of people liked it. I could see it being real popular if they kept rolling with that, and you know, dipped more. I'm not saying, like, go HBO rated R kind of stuff, but, like, more adult themes and stuff that isn't just, you know, the, I mean, shit, the original Star Wars movies have this in it. It's not like, you know, those are all rainbows and sunshine. Like, yeah, you can do a little bit of stretching on this stuff. I don't know. You mentioned Breaking Bad, and I was thinking of an interview that I just recently watched with, like, Vince Gilligan, and he was talking about how one of the best things they did for that show is to have Walter White be given an opportunity to completely get out of the situation he's in, and the audience to realize that, oh, he actually wants to do the things he's doing. And it gives the show a reason not to just be week after week, much like The Mandalorian has been week after week. It's the, you know, go to planet, perform a quest for somebody, go to next planet, perform a quest. It would have been that with Walter White. It would have been, he's so close to getting to the point where he can get out of this, something snatches it away from him, right? It's the next thing that comes in and takes that away. Mm-hmm. But when you frame it as he is the thing that is taking that away, like, he doesn't actually want the things that he's working toward, or the things you think he's working toward and he says he's working toward, that becomes an interesting character and an interesting show. And they could do something similar with Mando, and I feel like they might be trying to round into that, where it's like, okay, Grogu, I finally found your home world. I finally found the Jedi to take care of you. Do I want to give you up? Do you want to go to them? Like, can I communicate with that? Like, they are starting to like round some bit of nuanced character into this, this, you know, sock puppet of a nothing of a character from the beginning. Maybe they're going to go that way. I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, what happens when Isildur and the Lord of the Rings gets to the crack of doom and throw it in, and he just looks back and says no. Like, what happens if he finds the Jedi Temple, there's three or four qualified Jedi to train him, and he's got to give the child up, got to break those attachments, because that's the thing. Like, you are fighting at the core of the Jedi. They're not supposed to have attachments. They're not supposed to have loves, and they're supposed to be very kind of like neutral Zen all the time, and that's not what they're doing to Baby Yoda, Mando. I wouldn't mind a complete repudiation of the Jedi way, honestly, because I've long since become an adult and realized that the Jedi are just opposite whack jobs of the Sith, like
fanatics, you know,
denying human emotions and denying loyalty and love and bonds and that kind of stuff is just like inhuman. And I always thought that they'd take that in a direction of like Luke Skywalker, like being the third, like the middle path of that. But they haven't, and I wonder, it'd be interesting to see that happen with The Mandalorian, that, that like, you know, you don't have to do, you don't have to be this way. You can, you know, I mean, it's dangerous, obviously, passions run high and all that kind of stuff, but like, you know, the answer to being a healthy human being is not to denumb or reduce the emotions you feel. It's just to deal with them in an adult manner. Like, instead, like when you get angry, instead of like, I don't know, murdering them like animals, even the women and children, maybe you take your lightsaber out of the desert and just slice up some rocks every once, or you know, you don't go and murder the younglings, you work out your anger and your rage and your fear in other ways. That'd be cool, and that would be that would take, also, god, that'd be a great story to show like young people and teenagers too. You know, so that's, I mean, this show can grow into something, and that's another thing, like If this is family entertainment, all the great family entertainments grow with the audience. Like, you know, Harry Potter didn't stay like an 11-year-old. He grew up on a teenager, had dates, all this kind of stuff. And like, that's what I mean. The Mandalorian could grow up with its audience if it's 5 or 6 seasons long and you were a 12-year-old when you first started watching it. By the end, and you're 17 or 18, it should be speaking something different to you, maybe. Those are really great ideas for how they could take it. I never thought of it that way, but you're right. They got lots of possibility there.
Does Harry Potter fuck?
No. Harry Potter at most has some chase kisses and maybe dances.
All right, I was going to watch the series if he fucked, but never mind.
Yeah, once he discovers the true purpose of his wand, the one that he keeps in his pants, it's, Reduce-o bone arrow from there. It's all about elaborate spells of hiding boners and...
Nice.
And, nice. Never really recovers.
All right,
that's why
they
had to make the last movie 2 parts. There's just so much dealing with the boners. They had to, the rest of the plot to get pushed to a second movie.
The last movie might be 2 parts, but it's really about 1 part, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah. The Elder Wand, they call it. Anyway, now we're offending 2 franchises worth of people. Mando at baldmove.com is how you tell us how horrified you are at what we've done with Harry Potter and or the Star Wars canon. You can also follow along at forums.baldmove.com. We've got a thread talking about Mandalorian, a lot of passionate Star Wars people there talking about it. We'll be back next week. The Mandalorian is no more. Mm-hmm. We will be returning to our regular Friday spot, at least until is this done before Christmas?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. I think we're done with the Mandalorian throughout the rest of the season, but we still got 2 more penultimate and ultimate episodes, and they're going to be sure to be action packed. Lots of stuff, right, aimed for your Star Wars fan heart, and we'll be there with you. Until then, I'm Aaron,
and I'm Jim.
See ya.